This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hello, sinners and shakers and Christmas adventurers and all the ships at sea, and welcome to a very good year. I'm your host, Jason Bailey, and across the mic and across the country from me is my co-host,
Michael Hull.
So for those of you who were tuning in to Guide for the Film Fanatic and are wondering what the hell's happening here, let me explain. Before we started this show, Mike and I co-hosted a podcast called A Very Good Year, where we invited a guest to pick their favorite year of movies and talk to us about that year. In December of 2023, at the end of the first season, we invited back our friend Alyssa Wilkinson, who had just stepped into her role as movie critic at the New York Times, to discuss the year that had just ended as a sort of, you know, modified bonus episode thing. And we enjoyed doing that so much that we did it again at the conclusion of that show's second and final season in 2024. And now, ba-ba-da-da, here we are again. So join us in again welcoming back the one and only Alyssa Wilkinson. Hi, Alyssa.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming back.
You start a ritual, you just have to keep doing it.
I mean, we are, if nothing else on this show, traditionalists. We believe strongly in our holiday traditions. Okay.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
That's right. It was a little momentary worrisome scheduling snafu when we realized this was the first night of Hanukkah, but Mike worked it out.
Second night of Hanukkah.
Excuse me. My iCal is erroneous, apparently.
Yes. They got that wrong.
They did. All right. So, Alyssa, as we saw on A Very Good Year, it can be hard to get the full measure of a movie year until some time has passed. But I've asked you this the last 2 years. I'm going to ask it again. In the moment, what are your thoughts on sort of the overall quality of the films this year, the state of the art, where we are, all those sort of big overriding year-end questions?
I feel like it was a weird year. Mm-hmm. Like I would say even up to maybe a month and a half ago, I didn't really have any idea, aside from a few films, what was going to be on my best of list. Mm-hmm. It was just very strange. And in fact, several of the movies on my list are movies I saw in 2024 that were distributed in 25, more than usual. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. And of course, it's been like a very weird year for the business with all the merger and acquisition stuff, the AI existential dread, all of those things. Also, I feel like I saw, you know, I left Cannes this year thinking I didn't see anything that was like head and shoulders above everything else, but everything I saw was good. But then a lot of the stuff I saw didn't end up getting distribution yet this year. It'll probably come out next year, a lot of international films. So it just was a little bit strange, really. And we also had a lot of films, I think, from auteurs that were kind of not their top work. Mm. But then we also had some work that was just incredible from others. So I don't know. That's more interesting to me than a year where you kind of know by May what's going to win Oscars.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I might have some idea at this point, but I still don't really know. And I would rather do that. But it does. Everyone feels very nervous in the movie business right now. Mm-hmm. Everyone I talk to is just like, I don't know, like, who knows what's going to happen. But at the same time, like, you know, last night I was trying to go to a movie and every movie in Manhattan seemed to be sold out on a Sunday night. a snowy Sunday night at that. And I thought, well, that's good. I like
That's
that. I
good.
like to see this.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are good stories to be told too.
There are. I pulled up this, the sort of the when I was making the rundown, I pulled up the one I made from last year to sort of start from as a template. And then I look over the opening question. I'm just going to ask you the same questions again, because like the concerns and the things we're talking about have not changed much over the
No.
course of these last 12 months. Of course, I asked at this time last year about Netflix
Yep.
disrupting theatrical exhibition, et cetera. Now, even more of a concern with the possibility, and it is, we must reiterate, a possibility of this
Yes.
Warner Brothers Discovery acquisition, which is a long process, and obviously there are other factors in play. But what are your thoughts, sort of, on the Netflix question in general, which is always the question, but also
Yeah.
sort of the conversations that have been popping up around this Warner Brothers Discovery acquisition question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it. I don't
Yeah.
really, I would not, you know, I would be happy if none of it happened. I think that I have no reason to believe that the thing Netflix is saying right now, that they will continue to prioritize theatrical distribution. I think anyone who believes that should take a good hard look at why they're a commentator in this industry at the moment, because as we know, Netflix, the folks, you know, on top at Netflix would like nothing better than to see all theaters go out of business. So that's scary to me. On the other hand, I don't think that the other options are much better. And there is the fact that the movie business financial and business models kind of just doesn't make sense. And I was talking about this the other night with someone and just saying that, like, honestly, when you think about it, every art form is going through this right now. Publishing doesn't make any sense. I mean, we publish books. I have no idea how they make money. It makes
Me
no
neither.
sense to me whatsoever.
Absolutely none. Yeah.
The art world is in a state of absolute crisis because they don't really have a model that works. Music, they don't have a model. Nobody has figured out any
Right.
of this. Part of the problem being that art wants to be free, right? So monetizing it is always going to be a problem. But the movies are so expensive right now. I know you and I have talked about this many, many times, but they're made so expensively right now that
Right.
they've shot themselves in the foot 1,000 times. And that's part of the reason that Warner Brothers is in the state that it is in. It's just carrying all
Yeah.
this horrible
Debt.
debt. And it's also had an incredible year, which
Right.
nobody was expecting in January. So, you know, these are two things to like balance out. And on top of it, you know, Warner Brothers and all these companies find themselves in a place where, you know, the politics of the moment actually are going to insert themselves into whatever deal
Absolutely.
making winds up happening, which wouldn't have happened 2 or 3 years ago, or at least not to this, not in the way that it's going to occur. So it feels like a real inflection point. I mean, it feels like a moment we're going to be reading about in
Right.
our film history books in the future.
Right.
And what it will look like and what it will mean, I do not know.
Yeah.
You know.
The thing I keep finding myself saying is that, like, the Netflix acquisition would be the worst one for the movies, but the best one for like America.
Yes, I think that's true, which is
It
so bleak to say
is that
out
these are the choices that we're making, and above all of it, that I find myself, of all people, rooting for David Zaslav to
I
keep his
know.
fucking job. Like, that's a
I
sentence I never thought would
Yep.
come out of my mouth. But we'll move on from it, but it is a fascinating story to talk about, because it is rife with the kind of little ironies that, if you read them in a fictional book or saw them in a film, you would think were too broad. Like,
Yeah, completely.
the idea that Warner Brothers is going to be taken over by a company that wants to get rid of theatrical after having a year where they have proven over and over again the value and profitability of theatrical
Of
exhibition.
theatrical specifically, and of
Yes.
weird format theatrical too,
Yes.
right?
Yes. Like, not only
Even
proving that movies can still make money in the theaters, but that people are into these movies for these specific
yes.
experiences of seeing one battle after another in VistaVision, of
Yes.
seeing Sinners in IMAX,
Yeah.
of being a part of a crowd when you're seeing, God forbid, the Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
Like, so the idea that this that their most likely and motivated buyer would just look at all of those financials and say, nah, fuck it. Like,
Yeah.
primarily out of spite and stubbornness
Right. And
is
also
infuriating.
wanting, wanting to be able to do all the things that Netflix as a tech company would like to be able to do, which is harvest
Exactly.
data, control things with algorithms, and insert AI into every bit of the
Right.
process. And,
Right.
this is the stuff that scares me, and I think scares anybody who likes movies, but also it is taken as gospel that, like young people don't go to the movies. Well, it's actually false. It's old people who don't go to the movies. Young people
Right.
like going to the movies.
Right.
So, and people just like repeat the same truisms over and over in the business that don't really have any basis in reality. So that's the stuff that, I guess we'll see what happens over the course of the next year. But I think when you add the political angle to it, it reminds me more of what was happening, 80 years ago, in Hollywood, where there was a lot more back and forth between Washington and Hollywood, or wherever movies were getting made at the time, than there really has been in the last 40 years or so, which is pretty interesting too.
It was
Why
better
does it need to
the
be
other way.
sold? Well, I don't.
They're carrying a lot of debt, is what I'm told. That's basically the problem. Does it need to be sold? I mean, I don't know. That's beyond me, but it has something to do with enormous amounts of debt on the balance sheet.
And
This whole
satisfying
conversation,
shareholders, of
but
course.
then this is the thing, that shareholder thing. This whole conversation feels, we're going to talk about this later, but in the documentary where they talk about, Baal, the religion of Baal, right? And how nobody can ever make a decision. There's always some magical boss that nobody exactly can. This is, who are the fucking shareholders? God, I was trying not to curse so much. I barely have spoken a word. Who are these share? Do you know what I mean? Like, and these conversations always get passed off to this magical group of people who just happen to be the worst people on earth, who want the worst things and who are going to get there in the worst possible ways. And they're never really named. Every now and then we hear, like, you find out, like, oh, this guy's one of them or whatever, right? But it doesn't feel real. Like, where are they? Where is Ball? So we can sit him down and say, why exactly do we need to like ruin this thing?
I
Just for
know.
what? Like, it's for
Like,
a fucking write-off.
people like movies. Let people have them. This is not, I don't know.
But
I
I
don't
keep
know.
wondering how broken did it feel in 1968?
Right.
How broken did it feel? You know what I mean? I keep wondering, like, because I kind of remember how broken it felt in 1988, but not in the way that I would sort of be aware of it now. You know what I mean? But I keep wondering, like, how broken was it in those times when we all know it was broken, and we all also know how it got fixed, which is through art, right? And through Ball getting distracted. You know what I mean? So, like, is it that bad? Or is it worse? Is
It
it, you know
might
what I mean? Like,
be.
where are we on the 1968 scale, do you think?
I don't even know. I mean, that was a, oh, this is my moment. That was like a chapter or part of a chapter in my book, was just thinking about that moment. And I mean, to me,
I'm sorry, which book was that, Alyssa?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. My
Oh.
book, We Tell Ourselves Stories, Joan
Yes.
Didion and the American Dream Machine,
Great book.
partly because Didion and her husband, John Gregory Dunn, were screenwriters, and they were in Hollywood at that
During
time.
that,
And they were kind of old Hollywood aficionados, but they were writing for New Hollywood, so they're right in the dividing line. But the big difference now, and the thing that kind of scares me now, is A, I don't know that any executives at this point know why people like movies.
No
Like, it does
idea.
not strike me that these are people who understand, like, why people, and I mean top exec, there's lots of people in the middle who do, but like, why do people go to the movies seems to not be a question they have answered for themselves. And I think it's because tech has so thoroughly wedded itself to the movie business at this point, and tech people really don't know why that is true. Like, that's just
Or why
generally
humans,
tech.
why anybody likes anything in any form. They
Anything
don't
human, they,
understand
I
anything
mean,
about it, right?
my background's in tech. Like, I went to school with these guys. They're not operating in the same kind of universe as we are. So that's scary. And then on top of it, there is all this shiny stuff, tech related, out there that they're going to invest their money in, whether or not it's going to do anything for them at all. I mean, we just this week had this the news about Disney doing something with
Insane.
OpenAI, which is
Insane.
completely nuts. I mean, there's
Yeah.
no way this is going to come out the way they think it is.
No.
I mean, I'm calling it now.
Yeah.
But for Disney of all companies to be like,
Didn't they
sure,
put a
yeah, like
400-year copyright on Mickey, on
Mickey
mouse ears
Mouse.
or something
They like
crazy?
sue nursery schools for painting
Yes.
bootleg Mickey Mouses on their walls. And I just thought, like,
Yeah, but now
what are you
they're
doing?
gonna open up the technology that'll allow John Holmes Mickey Mouse to do 9/11. Like it's gonna
No,
be
I
it's the
mean,
worst idea imaginable.
but it goes back to the shareholder thing again,
Right.
right? Because the reason you do it is to get people to, and it grows your share price. It makes it look like you're forward thinking. All, Disney's in the very close to a point where they're going to have to, get new leadership, and that's what they're doing. And also, I think they see that. I mean, certainly they still are the big dog in the entertainment industry, but that won't last forever. It could get overtaken very quickly with a lot of the tech tools that are out there now. And Disney doesn't mean the same thing it did when we were kids, and it was like that was kids' entertainment. Now it's, kids' entertainment comes from everywhere. So I don't know. There's just a lot going on. And, meanwhile, I'm just sitting here like watching crap as it comes down the tube and being very excited when it's not crap, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Which
There you
is,
go.
a fun thing to say when you're just got your January release calendar in and you're like,
Yeah,
oh no. Here we
bleak as
go
ever.
again.
All right, so we are not going to do headlines because we all remember what happened in 2025 and it's frankly horrifying. So, Alyssa Wilkinson, are you ready to do a top five?
I am.
And then there'll be the music cue that I haven't heard in forever. This is so fun to go back and do a show. Okay. As with last year, there's a little bit less suspense happening because your top five has, in fact, been published along with Manola's in the New York Times, which we will link in the show notes. This is a ranked list. So, Alyssa, what is the number five movie on your top five for 2025?
My number five movie is Mona Fassbender's movie, The Testament of Anne Lee. Have you seen
And
this yet?
I have seen this. I have
What a
seen this.
movie. Yeah.
It is. Okay. So Alyssa writes, I've never seen a movie like this one, and I can't imagine I ever will. The life of the founder of the somewhat obscure Shaker sect is a weird enough pitch for a film, but making it a musical adds an extra layer of singularity. I can't help but think that in the hands of any filmmaker other than Fastfold, this would have been a horror film, but instead it's a tale of beauty, ecstasy, and religious devotion, uncompromisingly committed to Anne Lee's vision of simplicity and divinity, stunning in every frame.
Yes.
There are some motion pictures on this entire list that really genuinely feel like they were made to be reviewed by you specifically.
By
So talk to me about sort of, first of all, the circumstances under which you saw this and sort of the moment in it when you
Yes.
realized that you were going to have this kind of a connection with it.
I mean, the moment I realized that was probably when I heard that the movie was being made, frankly. So, in addition to it being a musical about the founder of Shakerism made by Mona Fassbender, who I love, which is just a weird enough pitch that I knew I was going to love it. I actually grew up in Colony, New York, which is a suburb of Albany, and I grew up like half a mile from the Shaker settlement that she plants. So I, like
I
every
didn't
field.
have this information when I
Yeah.
said the thing a minute and a half ago about how it was made for you. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I know. I learned to ice skate on Anne Lee Pond. My mother still
Wow.
lives off of Albany Shaker Road. So, and every field trip I took as a kid was to the Shaker settlement because that's just what you
Wow.
did. There's,
Yeah.
I shouldn't say settlement. It's a museum now. The only remaining Shakers, and I believe there are three, live in Maine or Massachusetts or something. But, yeah, so I'm extremely familiar with Shaker stuff. And also, I love a weird religious film. And that all of those pieces together were going to be interesting. And then I saw it and I was like, this is an insane movie. And it really is an insane movie. It just like fully commits to what it
Absolutely.
is. There's no hint of like, one of my worst pet peeves is when we have a historical film in which the character, the main characters kind of like talk like modern people.
Yeah.
There's no hint of this. These
Yeah.
people are like from a different planet, which is just a couple hundred years ago, but they're also just like Anne Lee in particular just feels like she's from somewhere else. She has these ecstatic visions. The movie treats them as if they're, you know, they're happening. And it's sort of it's grimy and it's beautiful and it's like kind of bloody and violent in some places, but it's also like there's a scene that sticks in my head where like there's a lot of scenes of dancing because the Shakers love to dance.
Yeah.
And there is like a scene where they're dancing in ecstasy and worship, and it looks like something from a painting, and it looks like an amazing, amazing film to look at.
Yeah.
Purely to look at, let alone like the music is gorgeous. It's all music from Shaker songs that have been arranged, and I really loved it. And about halfway through, I thought to myself, the only movie I've ever seen that's even kind of like this is The Witch, but The Witch is very much a horror film. This very much could have been a horror film, as I said, but it's not at all. It really it goes in another direction. It treats her as a woman who finds sort of equality and ecstasy and purpose in this very strange thing that she winds up doing. So yeah, I love that. And I think that Mona generally is a really interesting filmmaker and way undervalued.
I
There's only
went into
two other
movies where the music is the best part. Team
okay.
America and the jug band movie.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
And the Emmett Otter jug band movie. Those are the only two in my whole life and every movie I've ever seen until I was watching this movie. And I was like, yo, like if there's not television and Instagram to scramble all day and you're just sitting around all day and then you're in one of those rooms and they start doing that, bro, you believe too. You know
You
what I mean? Yeah.
absolutely
I've
do.
never seen a movie that made me feel like I was like, I'm here, I'm with you right now. I want to believe. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Yeah, and you really do feel like you're in the midst of their community and you
So
kind of buy
much.
it, you know?
I
Even though it is objectively strange what they're doing a lot of the time.
went into it almost completely blind. I hadn't seen any trailers. I didn't really know what it was about. I knew it was her, and I knew that, Brady co-wrote it, and I knew that Amanda Seyfried was the star, and that was everything I knew. So to have this happen to you, like, I don't know how well because it's not out yet. It's out, I think
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day. So if you're listening to this, there's a good chance you haven't seen it yet. If you can avoid knowing anything more than what we've told you or seeing anything, because when that first, I'm sorry to speak in the parlance of Hollywood, when the first musical number happens, like that's a moment of like actual majesty. And the only other time I can really think of having that exact same feeling in a movie this year was also an unexpected for me musical number, which is that incredible scene in Sinners. But so it's like it's that kind of elevation that it's like it's not only that it's because that it's sort of feels only possible when it's music. It kind of only feels possible when it's music in a movie that you don't know is coming. Like there's a very specific sort of levitation that I think you can feel as a viewer when the filmmaker knows what they're doing with that moment. And Ryan Coogler knew what he was doing with that moment, and she knows what she's doing in several of those moments in this movie. It's really,
Completely.
really kind of a miracle. And
I
Amanda
do have
Seyfried is
one.
just like, holy God, she's so good in it.
So good. There is one funny thing about the music, which is probably the most famous Shaker hymn is Simple Things, which is, you know, tis a gift to be simple, tis a gift to be free. People know the tune. Unless I'm mistaken, this does not appear in this movie at all. The movie it does appear in is Wake Up Dead Man, the Knives Out movie. It's the song that she's playing on the cello at the end. And I thought, well,
Man,
that's funny.
that's
So there you
beautiful.
go. In the Catholic movie, it's in the Catholic movie.
There you go. That's
I don't think
amazing.
I've ever enjoyed a movie where a lady was yelling at me for a lot of it about what Jesus thinks I ought to do either.
Yeah.
Like, if I knew that that's, you know what I mean? If, like, I mean, you know what, that's probably what the Ann Lee movie is going to be. You know what I mean? But, like, but the way that they took the vision seriously, and, you know, this sort of, but they also, like, oh, they say she spoke 17 languages that night. And you can tell that lady really believes it. But, like, it's not, they're not trying to make her do it. You know what I mean? There was this sort of, like, this combination between belief and restraint in sort of in the picturing of it. What you're picturing is I just, what an incredible movie. I didn't know it was coming out Christmas. I will actually go see this again in a real
Yeah.
theater.
And
And,
it's
like,
playing in 70, I believe. So that
you
would
have a
be.
70 screen up there, don't you, Mike?
Oh yeah, a few of them. I
Yeah,
will definitely.
yeah.
This is one that I would go see in a theater because, like, I was just sitting here on my computer, just like like it would, I imagine it would be so much more in 70 in a
Yeah.
room.
Yeah, it's
Oof.
great.
Thanks for that one. Thanks for that one.
You got it.
I don't think I ever would have been like, yeah, I'll let this lady yell at me about Jesus. But no, it's great.
All right, Alyssa, what is the number four movie on your top five for 2025?
Well, to nobody's particular surprise, I think it is Marty Supreme, directed by Josh Safdie, one of two Safdie movies this year, and definitely, sadly, the superior one.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Alyssa writes, watching Timothée Chalamet's frenetic, swaggering table tennis champ hustle and strut his way through 1950s New York can feel like clinging to the back of an amped-up alley cat for a couple of hours. Totally nerve-jangling, utterly exhilarating. But the story beneath the story is what made Marty Supreme so marvelous to me. It's about a Jewish kid who knows just what kind of anti-Semitism and finely stratified racial dynamics he's up against in post-war America, and who is using every means at his disposal to smack back. End quote. Nicely said.
Thank you.
The weird takeaway to your point, because through not even planning, but just like the way the year-end crunch happens, I watched Marty Supreme the day after I watched The Smashing Machine.
Oh, wow. Huh.
And my takeaway from that experience was I wonder how hard they fought over who got Ronald Bronstein in the divorce.
Yeah,
Because I
man.
came away from this movie feeling like maybe he's kind of the secret sauce to
Yeah,
the Safdie brothers
it's true.
whole
I
thing.
mean, you can see the Safdie touch in Smashing Machine. I think that movie needed a real good screenwriting pass. But this one is just, it is like watching Uncut Gems, except more terrifying somehow, more of an anxiety attack. Obviously, Timothée Chalamet is great in it and just
And
completely doused in sweat the whole time.
yeah, my thing with him, which is I'm way in the minority on this. Like I will own this. I have never before been dazzled by him.
Yes.
I don't think he's bad. I've never thought he was bad. I've just always felt like he is one of those actors who just is really smart and picks
Sure.
good projects and good collaborators. But I had never really seen him in anything that sort of gave credence to the talk I would occasionally hear of generational talent. I always thought he was fine. He's tremendous in this.
He
It
is
is
really.
a really, really good performance.
It's, yeah, it's wild. But I actually like Gwyneth Paltrow is amazing in
She's
this
great.
movie, which I don't think I've said that
What?
in a long time.
What? The pregnant is Marty's
Oh,
bourbon.
Odessa
I
Ozan,
mean,
yeah.
thank you. Just, oh my God. Dude, like I
So
walked away from
good.
the movie thinking it's a dude heavy movie. But her and Gwyneth were the ones that I was thinking about after the thing was over.
And Fran Drescher too,
I mean,
honestly.
when you watch the opening credits, and I often sort of appreciate a filmmaker who doesn't burden me with opening credits. Like, let's just get to it sometimes. But with this, like, I really enjoyed the opening credits just because it was such a random assemblage of names. It's like, oh, sure, Abel Ferrara's in it. Okay.
I know.
Which,
And the opening credits are happening while you're watching like a sperm and an egg, and it's playing Forever Young, right? And you're just like, what is this movie?
Immediately, what is this movie? Yes.
Incredible.
The th
Incredible. Yeah, but then I did, a lot of people saw it at this secret screening at the New York Film Festival, and
Right.
I was not going to go to Lincoln Center for a 3-hour movie at 8:30 p.m. on a Monday.
Incredible. Same.
So I only saw it like a month ago, I guess maybe, and I was kind of prepared to be. I went in with my arms crossed a little bit because I was like, whatever, everybody gets so, hyped up about
When
movies in
they're the
this way.
first one to see something, like
Yeah, but
there
the thing,
sometimes is some of that. Yes.
exactly, the thing I had not like been told or heard or I don't know was all of the social commentary part of it. Like which is, it is not heavy-handed really,
No.
but I saw someone compare it to The Brutalist on Twitter, and they got dragged for it. And I understood why they got dragged for it, but actually, it's not a terrible comparison because
It's
thematically,
not.
there's something very similar going on in here. And I don't really want to say a lot more because you kind of want to let it unfold. But if you go in knowing that there's a story beneath the story
I think yes.
that is very much about like kind of being Jewish in immediately post-war America. And there's like kind of racial stratification specifically here. It explains why the story unfolds the way it does if you're kind of like dense about the history there. But also, it just makes it so much more exciting because you can see shades in Chalamet's performance where he ratchets up and down
Yeah.
like what he's doing depending on who he's with.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating and just like really smartly written.
Yeah.
I was kind of bowled over by the fact that it was that good because I haven't. I mean, I know that is kind of something that has been underneath a lot of Safdie movies, or perhaps we say Bronstein movies, but it just is really, it really worked in this one, even though it's like it's a ping pong movie.
Right, but no, but that the all of that social subtext is what makes it. I don't want to, I don't want to get into sort of comparisons or denigration, and it's that makes it better or more important or whatever than, but it certainly makes it different. It certainly
Yes.
puts it at a different sort of level. And the thing that I think that this sort of, because this is going to come back up, it's, I think, important to understand that there are a lot of movies that came out this year, and a couple of them are on this list, and we'll talk about others that really do feel, in many ways, to be directly commenting on the moment
Yes.
in ways that are not possible with how long it takes to make a movie.
Yes,
But just the
correct.
way that smart filmmakers smell what's in the air and
Yep.
that works its way in directly or subtextually. And so, like, what I found so striking about Marty Supreme when I went to just write just a, like a paragraph, I didn't have an assignment anywhere. I was just like, let me just, I will often go write a capsule of something I'm not reviewing because I'll need a capsule for it someday. And what I found myself writing about it was that what is interesting about this one and the way that they're taking it up a notch is that Marty is the quintessential American. Like, he's completely full of shit. He's totally high on his own supply. He runs off this combination of like bravado and horniness and some intelligence, and just believes that he should be praised and allowed to achieve every dream he has for that reason. And I there's nothing more tiresome at 10 years in to be like, this is a Trumpian character, this is a Trumpian analogy. But I once I locked in on that, like, I could not stop thinking about it. Marty Supreme is America. It's not accidental. The fucking opening title, the ball, the ping pong ball that gives you the title, says Marty Supreme, Made in America. Like, that's basically part of the title. But
He's a
it does that
hustler.
so well. Yeah, he's a grinder, he's a bullshit artist, like, period, you know. Anyway, that was where I landed on that one. Mike,
But
thoughts
can
on
I?
Marty before we move on?
So I think they can just start calling their movies Facial Hair and Sweaty Desperation, and I would
It's
still watch them, no problem.
true.
personally preferred Uncut Gems just because the story is so
Sure.
now in New York, and I feel like I know all those guys. You know what I
Right,
mean? So like that
right,
was just sort of like I just personally dug that one a little bit more, but it seems pretty clear that there's a lot more going on here than the other one. But I would just like to say, you've seen Five Obstructions, right? Like, you know, the idea of the obstruction as a pathway to creativity. These guys need to like make a Hays Code movie. That's I would like to issue an obstruction challenge to the Safdie brothers to do a Hays Code movie. You guys, one of these, I've never thought that It's a Wonderful Life should be remade until I was watching Marty Supreme. And then I thought, you should, one of you guys should remake, the one who made Supreme should remake It's a Wonderful Life without changing.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Watching it. You can give people cell phones or whatever if you want, but you don't get to change the end. You don't get to
Yeah.
change the existential nature of the character. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Now that would be a good movie,
I
dude.
mean, I
That
would
would be a
watch that.
challenge. I would watch that.
I'd watch the shit out of that.
Yep.
Alyssa
Good movie, dude.
Wilkinson, what is the
Yes.
number three movie on your top five of 2025?
It is a long title. My Undesirable Friends, Part One, Last Air in Moscow, directed
Not
by
as long as
Julia
the movie.
Lochtev. Yes.
Alyssa writes, Lochtev's camera captures the gradual tightening net around a group of independent journalists in Moscow in the months before President Vladimir V. Putin orders the invasion of Ukraine. In the process, the film's 5+ hours illustrate the ways that authoritarian rule slowly chokes the free press. First with bureaucratic red tape and declaration of opposition to the state, then with more severe and dangerous measures. It's the most thrilling, terrifying film of the year, end quote. Well said. Here's the thing. Typically, when we do these shows, I'm sort of like the interviewer and Mike is like the color commentator. I'm gonna turn this one over to Mike because when I was like sending him the email with the links and what all we were gonna talk about, I was like, I want to warn you that this is a 5-hour documentary, but this is one of the few subjects I know you would want to see a 5.5-hour documentary on. So, Mike, take it away.
Well, I'm curious sort of how this movie hit you because I have been, you know, I was in Ukraine this year. I have been covering this story, you know, I've been covering Ukraine for more than 5 years, but this story specifically for 5 years. And, you know, for 6 months before the invasion happened, we were interviewing Ukrainians who were saying they're going to invade us and we're going to win. And it just sounded ludicrous. They just sounded insane. But we were interviewing military people and all these different people, and they were all saying the same thing. And every single one of them was right. And so I'm watching this movie, and I'll talk about my own feelings going through it later, which were every feeling a human being can have. But being so steeped in it, I was shocked at the fact that they chose to have no context. You know, it's sort of the decision making around the decisions around the filmmaking. And I know you do a lot of documentaries. I love your documentary coverage. You know what I mean? I really respect your opinion on this stuff. And I don't know how steeped in this story you are. So I'm really curious, sort of like how, why this roast. This is your number three. A lot of movies came out this year. You know better than anybody.
I mean, I think as a documentary, as an observational documentary, I haven't seen anything like this in ages. It's really that kind of long. I mean, it doesn't actually take place over that much time, but if it's just durational, by sheer fact that you're sitting there. I think that Zolotarev found herself in Moscow at this moment when she was making the film because she had read about these journalists at this independent station being made to, or they were put on a list of foreign
Foreign
agents. And
agents.
so they had to say that they were a foreign agent whenever they posted anything, even if it was just like a picture of their dog on Instagram, they would have to put like a disclaimer. And she was like, and she was born in the Soviet Union, but she grew up in the US from childhood. And so she was like, well, that seems like a good topic basically for a documentary. So she went over and kind of got there and realized what was about to happen. And so, and just stuck around. So you kind of just watch it, like watch what's happening. And as a journalist myself, like someone who works in a journalistic organization, I felt like, you know, the story of this documentary, and this is the first half of the documentary, I should say. The second half is still in post-production and it is coming, and it follows the journalists in exile. But the story of it is less about Russia and Ukraine, although that obviously is what that's the situation of it. But I saw a lot of movies that sort of repeated the same themes this year in different places. Whether it was, you know, Brazil or Middle East or different places, where it was like, how do governments, you know, we get this idea from the movies that like authoritarian governments just like march in and say, okay, everybody, now everything's shut down. And that's just not how it happens, you know? And what was so startling about watching this movie, well, so first of all, I first saw it in September of 2024. Because that's when it was playing at the New York Film Festival. So that's when I first saw it. In September 2024 felt different than September 2025. And it felt ominous, but not the way it continued to feel more ominous over time. But you could just see patterns in it that felt like a little too familiar, you know? And not just in the US. I don't think it's fruitful to like map another country's happenings onto your own as if like, oh, this is actually about us, because it's not. But you can see these historical patterns emerge, and we so rarely see historical patterns emerging like in front of us in real time. And I feel like the amount of time this movie lets you sit next to the journalists and hear them process what's going on out loud.
Their helplessness is fucking so
And they're
heartbreaking.
young women, most of them, you know? And
And
they're
they
just
don't do
talking about
anything to play it up. It's all they're doing is talking and looking at their
just
laptops, and their
talking,
just
looking at their
helplessness
laptop.
is choking.
And they're talking also about like Harry Potter, and they're talking about Emily in Paris, and like they, you know, they're just living their life, and they remember, most of them are, you know, in their 20s, I guess, late 20s. They remember things being slightly different, you know? They remember a little bit of a different feel. They talk about times being a little different, and that felt like this is, you know, this is a movie about a particular time, a particular place, and particular things happening to particular people. But it also felt like something else, like I was watching a story that has been told before and will be told again. And it just is really compelling. Like you start it and you're like, what is this? And then 2.5 hours in, you're like, I have to keep watching because I have to know what's going to happen, even though
You
you know what happens, right? So.
did this to me twice on this list because there's like this movie especially, I'm trying to describe it to my wife, and it's like they're just sitting around chatting. Like some of them smoke, some of them don't. They're just like drinking tea and looking at their laptops and their phones. And it's one of the most tense things. I mean, it's just like, and I'm trying to describe it to my wife, and it doesn't sound tense. You
No,
know what I
it's just a
mean?
series of dinner parties, you know?
But like, oh my God. Oh, I think it's if this. I just was going through, so I had every emotion. I'm watching this movie, and first I'm like, why am I spending 5 hours on these fucking Russians? Like, if I want to spend 5 hours on this story, I should be learning about Ukrainians. I've already decided which side I'm on in this conversation, right? But then, you know, don't be that. You know what I mean? And it's like I'm like sort of watching, and then at some point you start to remember Iraq. And I protested every chance I got. I voted against everybody, I voted against everybody who was for it and for
Right.
everybody who wasn't. I made art about it. I made journalism about it. I did everything I could about it. And if the Iraqis still didn't want to hear my opinion, you know what? I can't blame them. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
like you're in that moment too, where you're watching it and you're like, these are, you can see that they're doing everything they possibly can, up to and
Right.
including getting arrested, all this other stuff, and you're feeling all of that about it. Like, oh, and now I'm gone from like, fuck these people. Why am I learning about this? To like, these are my sisters. You know what I mean? Like, this
Yeah,
is like,
exactly.
and
Exactly.
then you go further into it. And now it's like, I know, I worked at CBS News for a long time. This is what it feels like right now with Barry Weiss running the joint, right? There's ha they're having these conversations, and like you say, it doesn't map one to one. None of them are going into exile, so on and so forth, right? And now that's this is the fourth like major movement, the third like or major emotional movement I'm having in the movie, where I'm saying like it's not the same, but there's a it rhymes, you know what I mean? And I'm hearing people talk about it, and I'm no longer in that building, but who, how your coworkers are, you know what I mean? You know the ones who are over. Stating a little bit and the ones who aren't, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff, right? And then you come to this point where you're like, it's a lot of things suck right now, but they are legitimately not assassinating Chuck Schumer on a bridge across the street from the CIA. You know what I mean? And like when you're watching that, and they do a really, really good job of this in the movie. And this whole Ford agent thing, again, I was reporting all of this when it was happening. We're interviewing people who are getting that label and then coming on and talking to us, right? And I haven't seen anybody else who have done even close to as thorough of a job, and not just by time, but by understanding and intent of describing what that foreign agent thing was. And under that law, this show would be banned. And not because Jason and I are such hardcore people. Jason and I both, I think, try hard to not do politics on this show outside of the context of art. Because, what am I, if it's boring, if you look at Blue Sky, you already know all the shit I'm going to say. You know what I mean? Like the reaction to the things right now is black and white, bro. There's not a lot of nuance in the situation right now. Jason and I edit the stuff out sometimes when we allow ourselves to go. You know what I mean? But still, this show would be banned, which is not about this show. It's about how low the bar is. Like you're saying, they're having to put foreign agent labels on pictures of their cats. And I haven't seen anything else that does as good of a job just with the journalism of that element of it, not let alone the emotional element of it, which nobody even tries to touch. And this one is emotion forward. The way that it's handled in this one is emotion forward. It just like, and now, so now I'm sitting here watching this movie feeling patriotic. I hate things that make me feel patriotic. I'm just like, I've gone through every possible emotion with this thing. It's so incredible. It's such a deep and incredible and thoughtful and hard thing that she's created. And when you watch it, it looks easy. Like a Wiseman movie looks easy if you don't know. If you've never tried to make one, it looks easy. Right? And but like it's not easy to make something this hard and deep and wonderful. It just, oh, breaking my heart, Alyssa Wilkinson. Just in piece in tiny pieces. What a movie.
It's so compelling.
Let me
And I
ask
think like
this.
the fact that I have been talking and thinking about this and reporting about this every single day for the last 5 years. And you and Jason have not. And yet we are all experiencing it in the same way. This is something that when I was initially very confused by the lack of context in the movie, but clearly the con you know, if you know anything about the last 70 years of the world, you don't really need the context of the guy who got shot and the how the sort of the slowly rising, as the water got hotter and hotter before the frog started to boil. You don't actually need any of that. And I thought I was resistant to that for a long time, as also a documentary filmmaker who prides himself on doing context, because so many people don't, right? But that was wrong. That they don't need it. And your reaction to it is proof that that's wrong.
I mean, it tells you what the story of the movie is, which is not that is not the story that's being told here.
All right. Alyssa Wilkinson, what is the number two movie on your top five of 20?
It is the Palme d'Or winning It Was Just an Accident by the great Jafar Panahi.
Of which you write, Panahi knows well the havoc that autocratic regimes can wreak on artists. He spent most of his career restricted or imprisoned by his own government in Iran, but making movies anyway. This Palme d'Or winning masterpiece of tragicomedy, the first he's directed since his release from prison in 2023, is about how being treated with cruelty tends to make humans lash out cruelly, and how, for powerful people who want to keep their power, that's the whole point. End quote. That's you're good at your job,
Thank you.
Alyssa.
Why they pay me the extremely medium bucks.
The thing that was sort of mind-blowing for me about this one when I saw it at New York, so I got to see it projected whole nine yards, was that I realized as I was watching it, I've only seen the movies that he has made in exile, if you will. I've only seen the movies that have been sort of, even when he's telling a story, that have had the scaffolding of the circumstances in which they have to be made. And so to see what he can do free of what never really felt like shackles. It wasn't like he was making bad movies because the circumstances had to be a part of it. But to see one where he really was able to shed all of those layers and tell a story in a straightforward way and to have it be so devastating and so powerful
I mean, he
and
did.
so eccentric and so like it's so many things.
It's so funny too. I mean, he did make this one in secret. So he, in he's his scripts are never going to get approved by the culture ministry. Let's just put it that way. And of course,
Correct.
he's been
Yes. So he
convicted
still
in
lives in
absentia.
Iran?
No, so
Okay,
he's
okay.
not that he left. He was able to leave for the first time like this year basically, or maybe last year, but and he has been convicted in absentia and is he can't go back basically. And it's been a whole thing getting him back and forth from different countries, and even he wasn't going to be able to come into the US for the New York Film Festival because of the US, and also because the government was shut down, so there was like an extra layer of problems getting him a visa, but Neon figured it out. He's just a very brave man, like an incredibly brave man who also has just, I mean, he tells these stories that always work on several levels. Like they're just good stories. Like they kind of all feel like fables or folk tales or something, but they're also
Well
all
said.
very real feeling. And they also all have some kind of a hidden, I mean, it's not very hidden, but it's a semi-hidden meaning, which I think is, it's they're always about something more than what they're about. And this one, I mean, what can you say? You watch it and it feels like a comedy of errors until it doesn't, right? I mean, this is a movie where there's like a guy in a box in the van for most of the movie, which is just a funny thing to say out loud,
And a woman in a wedding dress through the like I mean it there it, on one level it is entirely ridiculous. But the way in which he builds the narrative, the way that it snowballs with an almost screwball logic, but is about things that are so much grimmer than anything in a screwball comedy. And I don't know, just his ability to be so many different things at once is for me the thing that maybe I value most in a filmmaker is the ability to sort of juggle disparate narrative styles, disparate tones, to sort of the way he works the whole map in this one is really kind of exhilarating, I think.
And there's even times where you kind of don't know where you are for a second, and then he pulls back the camera and it's just like funny, and then it's super grim, but it kind of contains both of those at once. And it's that funniness where it's like, this is absurd, like it can't, this is so absurd. Everybody's caught. For most of the movie, you're thinking everybody's caught up in this absurd system, and that's kind of what's driving it. And then you get to the end and you realize there's actually like one more layer of something going on here. It's just a great movie. Yeah, it's just a great movie. And then there was, the fact that he could, every time I've seen a film of his at Cannes, he has not been there until this time. So there's always been an empty seat. And this often happens there. There was the legend. I think it actually is a legend, I have heard. But there was the legend of them having to smuggle one of his films in a birthday cake. But they've had to
That
kind of.
falls firmly into the realm of like, if it isn't true, it should
It
be.
should
So
be
we're
true.
gonna pretend that
Yeah.
it is. Yeah, big
But they've
time.
had to sneak his films in and out. He's made most of his films have been made in secret in one way or another. And he's equally good working in nonfiction or fiction registers. So it was just really great to like see him be there. And then that wasn't the reason he won the Palme. I think this film would have won the Palme if he wasn't there, but it was, especially meaningful to see that. And then the movie just you keep thinking about it after you see it.
You do. You do. All right. Well, that brings us to the conclusion. Alyssa, what is your number one pick, the best movie of 2025?
In a brave move, I have selected. I am a real maverick for this choice. One battle after another by the great and only Paul Thomas Anderson.
Alyssa writes, "Sometimes you can tell a movie is just going to work from practically the first frame, and that's one battle after another. Virtuosic performances, assured directing, propulsive rhythm, spot-on needle drops. Yes, all the elements are there, but what makes One Battle the best film of the year is how these all lock together to tell a truth we rarely dare to acknowledge. No generation, no matter how idealistic, will ever solve the world's problems. We'll hand our children what we messed up and tell them it's their turn now, and they'll take up those battles in their own way." This I will surprise no one myself by saying is also my pick for the best film of the year. What do you think it is about this movie that has connected so fiercely with so many people?
I mean, it's really good.
It sure is.
It's got great performances, which really I think is what anchors it, which is again not a shocker in a PTA movie. That tends to be true. It's got some of his signature stuff that really, I mean, the Christmas Adventurers thing alone would be enough to like. It's so perfect. And it's so rare for a movie to give us like a shorthand for something these days, a little bit of, the Christmas Adventurers is going to continue into the future as a shorthand for a certain kind of guy. But it I think that I've been thinking a lot about how I, grew up in the mostly in the 90s, and you kind of got the sense that we had gone past all the bad stuff and we were on an upward trajectory, grew up in the interregnum, I guess. And it's become, it became very clear that that wasn't true. And there's been so much talk in the last few years, especially about generational change or perhaps the lack of it in political leadership and how that's necessary. And I think the movie, again, as you were saying, kind of inadvertently or not, taps into that. It itself is an adaptation of a Pynchon novel from the 80s, kind of an adaptation of a Pynchon novel from the 80s, updated for the present. That one was about Reagan. This one is. So, like, it's kind of doing what it says it's about, too, which is bringing one generation's thing into the next generation.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, I love that. But, it's got Benicio del Toro talking about beers, and it's got, just like Leo wandering around in a bathrobe the whole time, and it's just a huge delight. And, I saw it in IMAX the first time, and then I went back and saw it in VistaVision, and it looked
Same.
even better. And, I expect that this is the kind of I always love Paul Thomas Anderson's movies. I've never seen one I didn't like, but this is
Correct.
one of those ones where you're like, oh, this one's major in his filmography. It feels like one of the one. It feels very mature, while also just being like thrilling and funny and venturesome, all those things.
It feels like a movie he could not have made before now,
Yeah, I agree.
even though there are many things about it. Like, it is not stately. It is a young man's movie,
Yes.
but It also just feels, but it is a stately young man's movie in the way that some of the best like late Scorsese movies are. You
Yes,
know,
very much.
that like he still has the fire and the electricity that has always made him an exciting filmmaker, but now he has 20, 30 years of experience. Like he's been doing this long enough now that he knows how to achieve these effects in a way that he didn't when he was 28
Yes. He's
making, you
got
know,
like the
Barney.
weird stuff. Like he's got those weird, like whatever Del Toro's doing in here is like funny and strange. And you kind of have to watch it twice so that you can pick up on all of it. But it's also it's the effect of like putting some really great boxes in a room and then dumping him into the box and saying, do your thing, you know? And you have to be a very confident director to be able to do that. And you can just feel the confidence oozing off of the screen from the get-go. And I mean, there's no better feeling than like sitting down 3 seconds into a movie and being like, I'm in good hands.
And then also that it's so that like it has so many incredible surface pleasures, and then also is so rich and textured that you pick up on things in second and third viewing that you might not have. You know, like I was so sort of overwhelmed by the entirety the first time that I saw it, and then the second time I saw it was so much about Benicio del Toro's performance. It was so much about Sensei Sergio, and it was about things that people had written that I had read in the interim about moments in that performance that I was aware of but hadn't keyed in on. The way that when he walks Bob through the apartment, that he introduces every single person in there to him and makes sure he knows who they are and what their name is, and the way in which he's made to understand that they are not supporting players in his story. Even though that's how we're going to meet them and how Bob's going to meet them, that everyone who he encounters is a person who's going through their own thing. The way that every single character in this thing has richness and nuance. The way that when I watched it the third time, the intake woman at jail almost made me cry. That is my favorite one scene performance of the year, is the woman who's like, "Are you diabetic?" Like I can't, and the way that that entire like the 10 minutes after that unfolds is some of my favorite shit in a movie
So
ever.
good. So good.
I don't know. I think it's kind of a miracle that this movie exists, that he managed to use his relationships, use DiCaprio, and probably, frankly, guilt David Zaslav into writing a check of this size that he needed
Absolutely.
to make a movie this in of this size and scope, I think is sort of astonishing. Mike, anything to add on One Battle After Another? We've sort of just ranted for a while.
I mean, I know people that actually went underground in the 70s. Like, this movie felt in some ways like an attack, in some ways like a fucking family reunion. I didn't know what to make of this movie. And also, like, it's a movie full of incredible female, incredible women who are all over this
Yes,
movie.
thank you.
But
Yes.
somehow, like, it's Sean Penn's best performance in his entire
I
career, and I don't say that as a person who doesn't
know.
like him or like as an insult or anything of that nature, but like maybe his best performance ever. And how, and you know, like I walked away from Marty Supreme thinking about the two, you know, main women in the movie. Somehow I walked out of this movie thinking about Sean Penn, just like I didn't. Holy granola. This movie felt personal oh, I already did the whole Ukraine thing. Duh, I'm not gonna do this again. But like, yeah, good movie. Good movie. Not my
Good
favorite
movie.
of his, not my favorite of the year, but oh my God, dude. Yeah, good stuff.
All right, Alyssa. Well, thank you for that excellent top five. And as with last year, we're going to skip the Hollywood Minute. Box office is still undecided. They're still giving out awards. We got 4 more months of that nonsense. So, Alyssa Wilkinson, are you up for a lightning round?
All right, yeah, let's do it.
All right, so you know how it goes. We're going to feed you a list of movies we have not yet discussed. You can comment briefly on each or pass if you wish. And here we go. Ella McKay. Yeah, I came out of the chute with Ella McKay. That's right.
What a weird movie. In 2008, we all still liked each other,
We
according
did.
to that movie.
We did. Wicked for Good.
Oh, I'm just so bored by these movies. I'm sorry.
Resurrection.
Oh, I don't understand it, but I think I liked it.
Sorry, baby.
It's okay. It's okay. I am a recovering academic, and it doesn't understand a single solitary thing about how academics work, and that, but that is also true of perhaps another movie you might mention, so I won't say it out loud.
Sinners.
Oh, I really like Sinners, and I liked it better the second time I saw it, so good movie.
All right, time for some double features. Richard Linklater gave us Nouvelle Vague and Blue Moon.
Yes, I love Blue Moon. I think it's fantastic. It almost made my top 10. It got bumped at the last second. I am not a Nouvelle Vague person. No, I'm a Nouvelle Vague person. I'm not a fan of that movie. I
There
just
we
found
go.
it pointless.
There we go. Two from Soderbergh. We had Black Bag and Presence this year.
I will never not enjoy a Soderbergh movie.
Yes.
I couldn't tell you the plot of either of those movies, but I enjoyed them immensely.
Two from Radu Jude, Dracula and Continental 25, which is technically coming out here next year, but I'm going to lump them
Yes.
together for
I
fun.
really liked Continental 25. It was so strange. It has dinosaurs. Dracula, wow. What a picture.
He's my favorite discovery of this year because I'd never seen any of his movies. I read about Dracula and I was like, oh, that guy seems weird. Let me watch some of his early stuff.
Oh,
By his
yeah.
like blew my absolute brain. I haven't even
Yeah.
gotten to Dracula yet because I'm watching every one of his movies in order because he's that guy for me this year.
You've watched Bad Luck Banging, then, I take it.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That was a real night in my. I had no idea what I was. I was in a room
Yeah.
full of people at the festival and was like, "What's happening right now?"
The two mothers under pressure movies, Die My Love and If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
I like If I Had Legs. I love Rose Byrne in it, and I really love Die My Love, famously. I think
Great.
J-Law is a killer. And also, I should say, for some reason, my social media feed is full of videos of Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson doing
Mine
like
too.
things. And
Great press
that
tour.
press tour alone
Great
is
press
worth the
tour.
movie. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had two starring Dakota Johnson, Materialists and Splitsville.
We did. I didn't love Splitsville. I liked Materialist more than most people did. But I mean, I love Dakota Johnson. I wish she could get a really great movie.
There we go.
That's my feeling.
The Mastermind.
Oh, obviously. I mean, come on. Kelly Reichardt, Josh O'Connor, he's the best boy.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, I'm a Frankenstein booster, but I will say the greatest thing about Frankenstein is obviously Jacob Elordi, and it kills me that he's not going to get awards recognition for that role because he is a revelation
He's
in that
very good
movie.
in it. The Secret Agent.
Yes, good movie. I'm kind of surprised by how much people love it, but I think it's great, and I'm happy for
The Naked Gun.
it. The snowman sequence, probably one of the best sequences in cinema ever.
Mickey 17.
Yeah, I didn't realize that came out this year until recently, but I liked it. Yeah, I will never not watch something Robert Pattinson's in because he's just a big weirdo and
He
he's
sure is.
great.
God bless him and Kristen Stewart. Like, I feel like Twilight has almost single-handedly kept indie film alive for the past 10 years.
That is true.
A House of Dynamite.
Yeah, so I liked this movie quite a lot when I saw it, and in retrospect, I probably liked it more because I saw it after the Springsteen biopic, which was quite bad.
Yes.
It's fine.
The Perfect Neighbor.
Oh, I have very complex feelings about this, and you can read some of them at the New York Times.
Yeah, we'll link to that. I shouldn't have put that in the lightning round. My apologies. Orwell, 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah, it's a little heavy-handed, but you know. People should watch it, probably.
No Other Choice.
Good movie. Has it come out? Yeah, I guess it has. Yeah, good movie.
I think it's
Bleak.
out Christmas. It's
Yeah,
coming soon.
okay.
Yeah,
That
yeah.
sounds right. Yeah.
All right. The Lost Bus.
I did not see The Lost Bus because it's a Paul Greengrass movie, and I can't watch his movies because they make me seasick.
There we go. And finally, a Spike Lee joint, highest to lowest.
I was at the premiere of this at Cannes, and that was a delightful evening. Mostly because nobody knew if Spike was going to show up, and when he did, he was in Knicks color. Like his tux was just stripes and Knicks colors. Movie's the most Brooklyn movie in a while, so how could I not love it?
Alyssa, let's do some plugs. Folks can, of course, read your
Wait,
reviews at the New York.
I got some
Oh,
movies.
sorry. Mike wanted to add on to the. Okay, go ahead.
I need to ask you guys about a couple of things that I saw this year
Okay, Mike.
that didn't make the list.
Okay.
That
All
didn't
right.
make the list. Did anybody see Arco? I
Yes,
have
I
not
did.
seen Arco yet.
I did.
Did you like
I
Arco?
mean, I didn't not like Arco.
Oh my God, I felt like it was like Iron Giant meets like Close Encounters. I fucking loved Arco. I was just like, I was shocked by how much I liked that movie.
That will make Neon very happy.
did anybody see a movie called She Rides Shotgun?
No. It is on my list. I haven't yet.
Okay, I'm just going to read my Letterboxd review because it's short. It's as short as Alyssa's articles. There is a Donald Goines book that opens with a little girl dancing in a living room. We're fully immersed in her joy before we find out she's moving mindlessly near an open dose of heroin, and her audience is the people who plan to inject the drugs. It is immediately obvious she's going to spill the dose, and the aftermath is the most harrowing and heartbreaking thing I've experienced in any piece of art in my life. Until this film. Bro, She Rides Shotgun is fucking wild. And like,
Okay. All right.
maybe it's just this girl dad shit, but like,
Okay.
that movie got in my guts, dude.
Okay.
And finally, we can't leave this without talking about the Alto Knights. I'm sorry, but
Yes, we can. Yes,
somebody's
we
gotta have
can.
it. No, we
This
can't.
that we
We
can. That
gotta
movie
Warner
had
Brothers won flop this year.
That movie had like negative cultural
I
footprint. What
think
do you
it
mean
made
we can't not
$9 million,
talk about it?
literally.
With everything we do, we can't talk about the Alto
Well,
Knights?
I literally can't talk about the Alto Knights because I didn't see it.
Did you
I
see it?
also did not see the Alto Knights.
No.
No.
Oh my God. All
I
right.
heard bad things, Mike.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say this. Barry Levinson is not the Meyer Lansky of gangster movies, but I was hoping to hear a little bit more in depth about it. But okay, so fine. I was the only person who watched the Alto Knights. All right.
All right, Alyssa, let's do some plugs. Folks can, of course, read your reviews at the New York Times. Your most recent and most excellent book is We Tell Ourselves Stories. There you go. There you got it. Available in hardback, ebook, and audiobook, and it will soon be joined by a paperback.
Yes,
Yes?
it will. June
When will that be?
23rd.
There you go. Available for pre-order now, though, I assume.
Soon, if not
Soon, if
now. Yeah.
not now. Okay, we'll
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yes, it will be.
get it in hardback then. All right. And where can people follow you on social media?
I'm on all of the platforms, sadly. On all of them except the one of which we do not speak, Twitter X. I am just at Alyssa Wilkinson. On that one, I'm Alyssa Marie, but I never post on that one, so you don't have to bother with it.
There we go.
But mostly I'm on Blue Sky or Instagram
I
generally.
am Jason Dash Bailey on Blue Sky and Letterboxd. Mike, where can people find you?
I am Michael Hall on Letterboxd, which has been more fun than I expected.
There you go. Of course, if you like the show, you think other people might like it too, please do leave us a rating and or a review on your podcatcher of choice. If you'd like to join our mailing list and get our show notes and such, you can do that at buttondown.email/filmfanatic. Mike, as we've completed a whole season now, I'm just now noticing that I say in this thing I read every week, our weekly show notes, which is inaccurate. We do a show every 2 weeks. We'll correct that for next season. Quick
If I
reminder.
didn't notice, then probably
Fair
nobody else
enough.
did either.
My book, Gandolfini, Jim Tony, and the Life of Legend, is out now wherever hardbacks, ebooks, and audiobooks are sold. Also out in paperback in April. And if you're one of those weirdos who likes to watch
Hey, you can
videos of
watch my movie
people,
on Amazon now.
yeah, plug for that. There
That
you
hasn't
go.
been that has finally become real. It's everywhere except for HBO now. Betrayal at Attica's on Apple, Amazon, I think Tubi, Canopy. It's in lots of fun all the places that aren't HBO.
There you go. You could
Except
see
for
but you could see
Netflix.
Betrayal at Attica, which is a very, very good movie. Oh yeah, and our YouTube channel guide for the Film Fanatic. Okay, Mike, before we go, what is your favorite movie of 2025?
The answer to this question is Good Boy. Did you guys see Good Boy?
I did see Good Boy,
I did not.
Look, I'm not necessarily saying Good Boy is the best movie of the year.
The
all
question
right?
was like, your favorite.
I'm not putting it up against one battle after another, whatever you want to do. There are people that made much more massive things. But I watched this, I sat down and watched this movie kind of on a lark, you know, and I have to say, like, A, it's weird we've never seen a movie from a dog's perspective before. And B, I don't know if anybody else could have made it work as well as they did, because it's not just putting the camera at knee height. Like they, you know, like they, the, you, they, you understand the world from, you know, what the dog knows, but you also understand sort of the machinations of the humans in the way that the dog wouldn't necessarily. The dog is sort of observant of things that people don't notice. It, they genuinely made this damn thing from the dog's perspective in a way that I didn't see. I genuinely was really impressed. The
while
photography
also
is great.
Yeah.
Like,
while also using, because it's a horror movie. So while also by adopting that perspective, doing some sort of metatextual commentary on the tropes and conventions of the horror genre, I found it very clever.
And making, and it's like, it's scary in moments and it's confusing in moments. And you never like, even by the end, you're not entirely sure, you know, sort of like, who is the monster? I just like, I just was it was really, really impressive and enjoyable to watch. But like, you know, obviously I just sort of enjoyed watching it. But then the more I was thinking about it, and I watched with my wife, who was just like, I'm not watching a horror movie about a dog. And I was like, no, no, no. I heard an interview with the director. And he was very clear that the one thing you're doing if you're making a horror movie from a dog's perspective is not hurt the dog. Like that's going to kill it for
everybody.
Movie
over.
You know, right. So I told her that very early on. I was like, I'm pretty sure the dog gets out okay. You know, I just, it was very, very impressive work and a fun movie. A fun movie
and,
to watch.
And if I recall correctly, 73 minutes?
Oh, now you're talking my language.
Hide
I'm
a drum.
Telling you, good boy.
Hide is a drum.
Favorite of 25.
There you go.
And you, Jason, what was your, you said battle after another. You,
I did.
You
so what I decided
one,
to do,
back
super,
up.
Here's what I decided to do super fast. I'm going to do my top five and I'm going to throw them out. And I want to, I've avoided a lot of these because I want to hear Alyssa's thoughts on these as well. So my number five of the year is Zodiac Killer Project.
Ah, yeah. I love it.
Which just scratches such an itch for me for the sort of self-referential, self-commentating documentary. Mike and I had a conversation recently where he was talking to a professional filmmaker who was saying the only way you can make money making a documentary now is by making a true crime documentary. And I feel like this movie, if enough people see it, will could become the Walk Hard of true crime documentaries. Like it's so beautifully punctures the cliches, the visual language, the while also not being snobby about it.
No, not at all.
He acknowledges that he watches all of these movies too. It's such a fine needle that he threads. And I just I found it thrilling the first time I saw it at Sundance in January. I rewatched it in December to make sure I was remembering how good it was, and I was right. Number four, Sinners, we discussed. Number three, my number three of the year is Train Dreams. Where do you land on Train Dreams, Alyssa?
I do love Train Dreams. The first time I saw it, I was like, I like this movie. And the second time, I thought it was incredible. And I will say, I mean, I reviewed it. I published a review and I got an enormous amount of email from people who were like, oh, I love your review. I love this movie. And I went into my editor on the next week and I was like, I think there's something with this movie. People really love this movie. So it has, I mean, I know there's discourse or whatever, but it's got a lot of fans.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is one of the increasingly rare examples. I feel like there used to be more of these, of the positivity of the Netflix effect, of the fact that like, because a movie is sort of arty, but has that kind of wide accessibility, that once word of mouth starts to get around about it and it's easy for people to see, they see it and are sort of taken by it. That was the same thing as Zodiac Killer. Saw it in January at Sundance, loved it, cried. Sort of forgot about it, revisited it when I was making urine, cried again. It's a great movie. My
Okay,
number
I've
two.
only seen the first half of Train Dreams, and I had to stop it due to unfortunate circumstances, but I have strenuously avoided any information about this movie, and all I can say halfway through it is nothing bad better happen to that family. Nothing bad better happen to those nice people, and don't make that face at me. That's a spoiler. I might not watch the rest of the movie now, and I'm
My number two
just gonna
for
let it be this
2025,
idyllic the first half.
my number two of 2025 is Sentimental Value,
Yeah.
which just absolutely clobbered me
Yeah,
at
that makes
Toronto.
sense. I would have predicted that, in fact.
Pretty me coded.
Yep.
Number one battle after another. Okay, that
Wait,
is
what is
that.
this sentimental value? I don't know anything about
This
this.
is, I always say his name wrong. Alyssa,
Yeah, I
what's.
do too. No, that's just because we're not
It's
of
the new
his.
movie from the director and star of The Worst Person in the World. Did you see The Worst Person in the World? Okay, it's
It's
their
the
new
new
one.
one. That's a good. Okay.
Stellan Skarsgård, probably going to get an Oscar nomination for it. Ella Fanning is in it, and she's fantastic. It's terrific. It's on my Plex. You can watch it. Okay, thank you again, Alyssa Wilkinson.
Of course. Thank you guys. This is always a pleasure.
It's one of my favorite things about the end of the year. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Jason.
And thank you for listening.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.